ओम गणात सिमरंदशा गणंजना शलाकया चक्षुन मेडिकाम येन तस्माय श्री गुरवे नमः. यू कैन टेक फॉलो, यू कैन टेक द हार्मोनियम सो इट डजंट फॉल बैक. सो वेरी हैप्पी टू बी हियर विद ऑल द असेंबल्ड वैष्णवस एंड सो मेनी नाइस डिवोटीज हियर. सरप्राइज्ड, दिस इज अ वंडरफुल सरप्राइज. आई एम सॉरी आई हैवंट कम हियर सूनर. Now I have to come here more often now that I know there's so many devotees here. I thought there was just one or two people here in Charlotte before. But now, so many nice Vaishnavas. So, what I'd like to do this evening is talk about this song that I just sang. Because it's a song glorifying or the holy place of Vrindavan. So how long do we have to speak, Annie?
Abhuji, today is Friday evening.
Well,
tomorrow is a holiday, so it's your time.
Holiday.
As long as you want.
Oh, I don't get a day off, so. That's the only problem. You may get a day off. Sannyasi's work is never done, as that poem goes. So, I'd like to talk about the glories of Vrindavan in relationship to this particular poem, because Vrindavan, Mathura Vrindavan area is where Krishna appeared and enacted his pastimes 5,000 years ago. Has anyone here been in Vrindavan? Oh, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Wow, that's nice. Has anyone here been to Govardhan Hill? Wow. Has anyone here been to Ravel? Radharani's appearance place. Ravel. Wow. Pretty good. Pretty good. So you're all Brajavasis then. So I'll speak a little bit about, of course, the holiest place in the whole Braj area, it's 84 Krosh area, is Govardhan. Hmm. And the holiest place at Govardhan is where? Does anyone know? Radhakund Shyamakund. So this is the very center of the Lord's pastimes there. So this poem starts off glorifying the three presiding deities of Braj. And it's very interesting. We'll speak a little bit about these three presiding deities. There's Madan Mohan and Govinda and Gopinath. And these three presiding deities are representing the three aspects of devotional service, or the three progressive stages of devotional service. Of course, what is the goal of devotional service? Anyone know? No one knows. Krishna prema.
Krishna prema.
Krishna prema. Krishna prema means to serve Krishna. Anyabhi lashita shunyan jnana karamana avritam anukulyena Krishna anushilaram bhaktu tamam. Without any personal motivation. There is actually a negative definition in this verse I just quoted, which is from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And there's a positive definition. A negative definition is what you shouldn't be doing. You shouldn't serve Krishna with any desire for fruitive gain. That means gross things in this world. And then you shouldn't serve Krishna for any desire for liberation. Hmm. Or even for knowledge or jnana. So, anavritam. And then, anukulyena krishnanushilinam bhaktirutamam. There's three positive qualities that are, one should serve Krishna actively, not dreaming. Someone said to me yesterday, I had a dream that I was serving Krishna, then I woke up. That's called determination of the mode of ignorance by Krishna in the Gita. Dreaming, procrastination. You ever do that? I'm gonna surrender to Krishna tomorrow. But tomorrow never comes. So must be active. Must be doing it with a sense of pleasing Krishna at the same time, and must be doing what Krishna wants. Those are three positive attributes of pure devotional service. Remember that. If you just get one out of the three, it may be karma yoga. That's true. If you're serving Krishna according to what he wants, but not with a spirit of devotion, that's karma yoga. But if you're serving Krishna doing what he wants, with a spirit of devotion, trying to please Krishna, following the process of bhakti. That's bhakti yoga. So we're bhakti yogis. So that's pure devotional service. So what's the benefit of pure devotional service? You get to cry a lot. I was just reading the Brihad Bhagavatamrita that the residents of Vrindavan, basically they can't distinguish between happiness and distress because everything is so intense. The emotions are extremely intense. Like in this world, when you first start doing something, you have intense emotions, like, you know, boy meets girl or something like that, or you just get married. It's pretty intense. But then after 5 or 6 years, it wears off. Or like they have nowadays, there's this new word in the English language called euphoria. You ever heard of that word before? You should look it up in the dictionary. I just made it up. No, it's actually... euphoria means basically when you get your new electronic gadget, like an iPhone or an Android. No, that's not so. Or an iPad or something like that, and you unbox it. You heard of unboxing? Like on YouTube, they have all these things about unboxing videos. So when you unbox it, you just feel ecstatic. And you have all sorts of emotions coming out. But then what happens after about a week? Bored. Or when you open up a new present, like it happens to be your birthday or something like that, you get very excited, you open it up, play with it a little while, and it's boring. But the intensity of the emotions in the spiritual world, they are unbelievably, they're always intense. It's like they're always that newness. That's called rag, you know. Like you've heard the word raganuga bhakti before. So that's what it means. Intense. Wow, there's music. The confirmation. You know, like raganuga bhakti means intense. The intense emotions, intense attachment. Really intense. And then, so raganuga bhakti has two components. Intense attachment and intense lawyum, intense greed. So this is the price of pure devotional service. So that's the goal. The goal of Krishna consciousness is to be so much in love with Krishna that every moment is like the peak of intensity. Millions of times more than any intensity that you've ever experienced before in this world. Can you imagine that? And this is called bhava. Bhava means emotion. And even the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they've analyzed the different types of emotions that pure devotees have. And there's different categories. There's something called a vibhava. That means something which excites you. Like if you see a peacock feather, even though it's not Krishna directly, that's called an adipana. I don't want to teach too much Sanskrit here. But anyway, and then it excites you so much you start shaking in ecstasy. Like there was one devotee of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His name was Mukunda. He saw a Muslim governor being fanned with a peacock feather and he fell to the ground because it reminded him of Krishna. That's intense emotions. When you see, just seeing a peacock feather, imagine that. What do you feel when you see a peacock feather? Nothing. But a pure devotee, or Gauranga Balite Habi Pulaka Sharir. Does anyone know that song?
Yes.
When you hear the name Gauranga, then hairs stand on end on your body. What to speak of seeing Krishna? So this is called a vibhava, something that excites you. And then there's the anubhava, the emotions which naturally follow from that, like, you know, hair standing on end, foaming at the mouth, things like that. There's what's called sattvika bhavas, which are eightfold, which are always there. And then there's the vyavachari bhavas, 33 of those, which overwhelm you. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, generally did not exhibit these bhavas because people would take it cheaply. But there were sometimes when we were with Prabhupada, there would be certain things that would stimulate Prabhupada's emotion so much that Prabhupada would be stunned. One time Prabhupada was in the temple in Caracas, Venezuela. I was actually temple president in Caracas, Venezuela. I speak Spanish. So, and Prabhupada saw Gaura Nitai there, and he went into trance for about 10 minutes. That's called a Vyabhachari Bhava. And the same thing happened in Atlanta, Georgia, later on. Right after the other. Caracas and Atlanta, Georgia. So this is what it means to love Krishna. It's just like young people, when they're in love, they can't think of anything. They run into the wall sometimes. Isn't it? You don't want them driving a car if they're in love. Or they're texting while they're driving a car. You ever seen that? Yeah. And they make so many texts a day that they have to be taken to the hospital for some sort of carpal tunnel syndrome. It's true. Yeah. I've seen that. Hundreds of texts a day. I mean, after two texts, my fingers hurt. I guess because I'm not in love with anyone but Krishna. So this is actually what it means to love Krishna. It is so intense, you can't figure out whether it's painful or whether it's ecstatic. It's ecstatic pain. And then sometimes Krishna is present when you're a pure devotee, and sometimes Krishna is absent. And when Krishna is present, you're actually in anxiety because soon he's going to be absent. And when Krishna is absent, you're in anxiety because he's not there. This is love. There's one story in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita where Krishna was asked, why doesn't he go back to Vrindavan after he left? He left Vrindavan when he was about 16 years old. Some acharyas say 11, but Prabhupada said 16. So he left when he was 16, and he didn't come back, at least didn't manifest his presence there. And Krishna was asked, why don't you go back? And he said, because it would be more painful if I went back. For the residents of Vrindavan, because they'd always be thinking, when am I going to leave again? So but the pain is ecstasy, and the ecstasy is pain in the spiritual world. It's such intense emotions, and that is spiritual perfection. So anyone wants to sign up?
Yes.
You sign on the dotted line. So so getting back to this poem, there's three stages. There's actually many stages in reaching, but there's three basic stages that are described here in accordance with their corresponding deity. That is Madan Mohan, Govinda, and Gopinath. And those three stages are Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Sambandha, translating that, means basically to understand who you are. Like Krishna gives Sambandha knowledge in the Gita quite a bit. He says, you're not the body. Deyanosmin yata dehe komaram yovanam jara tata dehantaras praptir tiras tatra namuyati. That the embodied soul is passing from boyhood to youth and to old age. Similarly, the soul passes into another body at death. That's Sambandha again. That means who you are, and then also knowledge about God. And then Abhideya means, what do you do about it? You know, it's nice to know that Krishna's God and you're reincarnating. That's nice. And that you've been in the mature world for 10 million births, and you're going to see Yamaraj in your next life, you know, or after this life. It's nice to know those things. At least it's nice to know where you're going. But what do you do about it? And then Abhideya means, how do you get out of the cycle of reincarnation and go back to the spiritual world? You know, the whole process of bhakti, navabhakti, the nine processes, beginning with hearing, chanting, and remembering the Lord. Ultimately coming to the point of surrendering everything. And then, prayojana means, what do you do when you're back to Godhead? You know, what's the perfection of life, which I was describing before, the bhavas. So these are the three stages. So there's three deities here. So the deity of Sambandha, which means basically to understand who you are, That deity is Madan Mohan. And the reason Madan Mohan is the deity, we just have to understand what that name means. Madan means what? Does anyone know? Cupid. Who is Cupid? His birthday is coming up soon, isn't it? 13 days. All you men remember. Get flowers for your favorite deity. So there's actually a Cupid. Yeah, Kandarpa. Mm. And he's called Ananga. Why is he called Ananga? Does anyone know?
Lord Shiva burned him to
ash. Yeah, and therefore...
He can't be seen,
yeah. He has limbs, but he's invisible. That's why Ananga basically means implicitly he's invisible. I mean, if he was visible, you could just, like, do something to get out of his way if he came in. Like if Cupid came in the door and you saw him say, I'm heading out the other direction. He has an invisibility cloak. And then he fires arrows too, right? What are his arrows? No. Five. What are the five arrows he has? Nobody knows. The objects of the senses. You know, the smelling, the taste, the ears, like you hear some music, some Bollywood music. You see some Bollywood movie. Cinema songs. That's Cupid there, you know. You think it's just a movie, but Cupid's come. So he's firing the arrows into your heart when you least expect it. And then you become attracted, and what happens is, what is it? Nunam pramata kurute vikarma yarindriya pritya aprinoti. Does anyone know that verse? That's from Lord Rishabhadev. Nunam pramata kurute vikarma yadindriya pritya aprinoti. When your senses are very dear to you, and that's Cupid. That's how he gets to you. That's your vulnerable part. That's your Achilles heel. Of course, that's a Greek example. But that's your vulnerable thing. That's how he can get in. So, or the chink in the armor. So he gets in through the sense, yadindriya priti aparinoti, nunam pramata kurute. One becomes crazy. Nunam pramata, prakriti rupena jayate. Pramata, mata means to be an illusion. And pramata means to be in complete illusion. You understand? That pra in front, it indicates completely illusioned. Or Prabhupada actually described that word as completely mad. You know, mada, mad. But mad in the sense of thinking, I am this body. That's madness. Prabhupada would often say, who is crazy? So, nunam pramada kurute, and then one does things vikarma. One commits activities that are against one's self-interest or that hurt one in this world. Yadindriya pritya aprinoti. So that's what Cupid does. So, therefore, if we want to be diverted from our attraction to Cupid, then we have to take shelter of Krishna. Krishna is known as Madan Mohan. He who attracts Cupid or attracts someone away from Cupid. That's another way of understanding that. And, of course, who is that who attracts Krishna who attracts Cupid? What's the name of that? Madan Mohan Mohini. So... Mohini. Mohini means to bewilder someone. Just like you have the Mohini incarnation of Krishna and she bewildered even Lord Shiva. So that's Madan Mohan Mohini. So that's why we go to Madan Mohan so he can attract us away from Cupid. As Rupa Goswami says, if one at all wants to enjoy society, friendship, and love, don't go to see Krishna's plane as flute along the Keshi Ghat. Isn't it? Because if you go to see Krishna, then everything else will appear boring in this world. There's a saying nowadays, seen it, been there, done it. You've heard the saying before? So it'll be boring. Like you're seeing Krishna, everything else is yuck. Like the beauty of Krishna is so great that even in comparison to, let's say, the Heavenly Society girls or the Heavenly Society people, you can't compare it because they look ugly compared to Krishna. And what do we look like compared to the people? We look like a bunch of frogs sitting here. Can you imagine getting attracted to a frog and just, you know, picking up a frog and kissing a frog? That would be unbelievable. So that's what we look like. You know, comparative beauty. There's comparative, superlative. So comparative beauty is, and then compared to Krishna, I mean, God knows what we look like. So therefore, when we see Krishna, and not only see Krishna, Namaguna Rupa Leela, when we chant his name, Purnashuddha Nitya Mukto Binatvam Namanao Namachintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. So when we chant his name and we hear about his pastimes from pure devotees such as Srila Prabhupada, or we see his form in the temple, the deity form, we hear about his characteristics, Krishna's so many wonderful characteristics. He's Dhira Lalita, Dhira Prashanta, Dhira Datta. These are the four main categories. That means he's very peaceful, but then sometimes he's pretty angry. He has contradictory characteristics. That's why he's so interesting. He's not always the same, you know. You can't predict him. Sometimes he tells the truth, sometimes he lies. That's why he said to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, Kuntiya Pratijanihi, Nami Bhakta Pranashati. See, you should declare it that my devotee will never perish because people will not believe Krishna. When Krishna says it. Because Krishna has this habit of lying, stealing, doing other things that aren't so, pinching little babies, you know. Isn't it? You don't want to let Krishna in your house. He's a dangerous person. He's pretty dangerous. So he has all these wonderful these contradictory qualities. Dhira Prashanta, Dhira Dhata, that means angry. Dhira Lalita, very playful, tricky. And so when you hear about it, then you naturally your mind becomes drawn away from this illusory energy. So that's Madan Mohan. And that's the Sambandha. And that is for Abhideya, that's Sri Govinda. Govinda, what does Govinda mean?
Pleases the senses.
Pleases the senses? And the cows, too. And the cows, too. So, in other words, engage Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. Krishna is the Lord of the senses, controller of the senses, and we engage our senses in his service. Sarva Pari Viniramuktam Tatparatvayana Nirmalam. That we engage our senses. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. We engage our senses in Krishna's service and we give up all of our upadis, designations in this world, like I am American or Indian or I am an old man or I am a short man or a tall man or whatever I am, cricket player. Or I thought I threw that one in. So then we give up all these designations, or woman or whatever. And upadi, sarva upadi vinir muktam. And the word actually meant to serve the Lord's senses. Rishikrena, Rishikesha, Sevanam, Bhakti Ruchate. And so that means we engage in Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga begins with, according to Rupa Goswami and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Do Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangota Vajanakriya, it begins with having some faith, associating with the devotees, and doing what's called bhajana kriya, or the activities of bhajan, which means hearing, chanting, rules and regulations, four regulative principles, chanting, japamala, going out and preaching Krishna consciousness. Has anyone here ever distributed any books? There's Prabhupada's books you have. Good, good. That's part of bhajana kriya. Because it's a Sankirtan movement. I was reading today in a commentary that Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur wrote on the Gita Govinda, which is a very elevated book by Jayadeva Goswami. he equated the process of sankirtan, which means preaching and congregational chanting, with the meditation on Krishna's intimate pastimes in Vrindavan. It's very, very interesting. Because the Gita Govinda deals, it's Jayadev Goswami's book, and Jayadev Goswami's, his disappearance day is today, was the author of the Gita Govinda, a very intimate book. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur equated the performance of Sankirtan, or preaching, or book distribution, with that meditation on Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes. So that's also part of Bhajana Kriya, or Abhideya. Abhideya. And then as you practice during the Abhideya part of your devotional service, then you get rid of what's called anarthas. Hmm. What's an anartha? Like what? What don't you want? Your old car? Or your...
Lust, anger, greed.
What's wrong with that?
Makes you miserable.
How do you know?
Oh, I know.
Anything against
bhakti, but specifically that it's mentioned kama krodha mada matsarya bhavaya. Lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy, fear. And guess what modern society is trying to increase? All those things. You know, all the advertisements are just like, buy this, and then you think, I must have. There's, oh, the iPhone 6, when is that coming out? Hasn't come out yet, but you see, like you on the news sites, you see pictures of it, you know, someone sneaks a picture of what they think is the iPhone. You've seen that before? The iPhone 6. And then when it comes, people are lined up, like hundreds of people at the Apple store. Isn't it?
Yep.
Just hundreds and hundreds. Just waiting for it to come out. they're sleeping there. So what I'm talking about is the modern society increase. It turns people into clones, basically, parts of the machine, the economic machine in America, where things are based upon consumption, throwaway consumption, planned obsolescence. You've heard of that before? Planned obsolescence. Previously, they used to engineer planned obsolescence. Like the light bulb, when they first invented light bulbs, they would last years and years and years. And the light bulb manufacturers were thinking, this is not going to work. Because we're going to be out of business after 2 years, after everyone has a light bulb. So then they engineered, oh, it should burn out after a few hundred hours, 1,000 hours, or whatever it is. That's called engineering planned obsolescence. They don't have to do that anymore. What they do now is that they change the style. You know, you come out with the latest model, and the old model becomes obsolete, even though it works still. You know, the new cars, new phones. You know, we had, practically speaking, the main topic of discussion between me and Gopal is Android versus iPhone. You know, haven't spoken to him about Krishna for the last 3 years, you know. So in other words, lust becomes increased tremendously. And then as far as fear, you read about all these different things in the news. You go on CNN or, you know, CNBC or whatever on the and you read about cable TV, you know, this is happening in this country, that's happening in that country, and you're just afraid to walk out the door. I mean, for example, I just spoke to my mother 2 days ago, and she said, you're traveling overseas, you shouldn't do that. You don't know what's happening overseas. You know, you're going to India, you don't know what's going to happen there. I said, you know, I'm fine there. It's safer there to ride a bike than in America. Because at least people are alert when they're driving. They may drive crazy, but they're alert. So, but people are so put in a state of so much fearfulness. I mean, just like the with the stock market, you know, the Dow Jones Industrial Average going down, up. You know, people are just watching this thing and all their money disappear one day. So, you know, And anger, what is speaking of anger? You know, they're talking about gun control now in the United States. You know about this. And every day now you're reading about somebody going postal. You know, that means shooting, not the post office, but that's a saying in America. Just going somewhere and shooting poor innocent kids or taking kids hostage to an underground cave or something like that. And it's, and then they're playing these games, increasing the anger. That, you know, what video games. Most popular game is called Grand Theft Auto. You've heard of that before? And it just, in that game, you get to kill. So the anger they're increasing, lust, anger, greed, illusion. You know, you are your body. Modern science is going to solve every single one of your problems. You'll be able to replace all your body parts one day. Your head, you want a spare head, you know, you can get a new head, genetic engineering. So, illusion, fear. I mean, all these things are being increased. But our business is to decrease these things. Just like Prabhupada, Prabhupada's name is Abhaya Charanadavinda. It's one who's, he becomes fearless by taking shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. Abhaya Charanadavinda. So, well, by chanting, you take shelter of Krishna's holy names. And you lose your lust, anger, greed, illusion. And then your relatives are saying, you know, what do you have in life anymore? Like, I'm talking about my mother again. She's Jewish Indian. So, anyway, if you understand what I mean. So, she says, you know, there's still time for you to do something with your life. If you want to go to medical school, I'll pay for you. You 63-year-old person going to medical school. I'd have to specialize in geriatrics. You know, that's it, old people medicine. And I'd have to be my own patient. So people can't understand that. You know, they think you devotees are crazy. The Prabhupada said, "Who is crazy actually?" But then we become happy because this lust, anger, and greed is actually causing us bhukti, bhukti, siddhikam, sakale, ashanta, becoming disturbed. We're disturbed, even if we want liberation. What to speak of bhukti or sense gratification? Our minds are disturbed, and without peacefulness, there's no happiness. There's no happiness. So. Anyway, so anartha nivritti tat, and then after anartha nivritti, then you become steady in devotional service. That's called nishta. After nishta, you get ruchi, which is a taste, a firm taste for devotional service. Then a shakti, completely attached to Krishna, the bhavas, which I described before, and ultimately prema. So this is the progressive path that includes the Abhideya, and then the Prayojana, that's Prema, going back to the spiritual world where you get a chance to relate to Krishna in one of five different ways. You know, you can be Krishna's passive worshiper, you can be Krishna's servant, you can be Krishna's friend. There's many types of friends, intimate friend. You can sit on the same bed with Krishna and slap him on the back and say, "Hey, Krishna, how are you doing today?" Wouldn't that be nice? Or you can become Krishna's mother, father, or you can become Krishna's lover. So these are the aspirations of devotees. So anyway, so Gopinath is the deity of this Prayojana, or the going back to home, back to God, the ultimate realization. So that's why Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami wrote this poem in such a way. He started with the Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana aspects of devotional service, or the three presiding deities. And then the next one, we may not get through the whole poem because we'll be here all night if I do that. So then the next verse, he glorifies Shyamakunda, Radhakunda, and Govardhan Hill as well as the Yamuna River. Nowadays, of course, the Yamuna River is stopped up before it hits Delhi. You've heard about that before? Great sin on the part of the industrialists there. All you get later on, after the dry riverbed, is some of the effluent from Delhi in the Jamuna riverbed. But traditionally, Jamuna would flow through Vrindavan, and it's said that anyone who takes shelter of the Jamuna will not have to see Jamuna's brother. Who's Jamuna's brother?
Yamaraj.
Because they're both the son and daughter of who? Sun god, Surya. Surya. So the Jamuna is very, very important. And you hear some, Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Krishna is enjoined along the banks of the Jamuna. So as far as Shamakund, Radhakund, and Govardhan Hill, I think you all know where they are. They were both... Radhakund was created by Srimati Radharani and her associates, and Shamakund was created by Krishna after killing of the what demon? Arishtashura demon. And Govardhan Hill was lifted by Krishna with the pinky of his left hand. Why is Govardhan Hill so small?
In separation.
That's the actual story. There's another story, of course, too.
Curse.
That he was cursed by Palastya Muni. Because Palastya Muni wanted to carry him to Kashi. And he put him down, and Govardhan wouldn't move. Because that was the deal. And Palastya Muni said that you're going to shrink by the size of a mustard seed every day. But the actual reason is when Krishna left this world, he really shrunk down because he was feeling separation from Krishna. So around Govardhan, there's so many places. In the center of Govardhan, in the city of Govardhan, there's this very nice lake called the... Anyone remember? Someone said it, I heard.
Manasarovara.
No, not Manasarovara. Manasa... Ganga. We'll take you around Govardhan, you know, just describing right now. And the Manasa Ganga was created by who? Krishna. Why did Krishna create the Manasa Ganga? Because he just felt like it? Who did he kill? No. The Arishtasura, that's the Radhakund story. Got it wrong. So, after he killed the Vatsasura demon, there was a Vatsasura is the calf demon. So Krishna saw this calf demon and he killed him. And the coward boys said, "You're very sinful. You've killed a calf." That's actually the most sinful thing, to kill a cow, calf, or a bull. Because the bull and the cow, they're either the cow provides principles of religiosity in liquid form, and the bull is actually dharma. So to kill either one, or a calf, is so sinful that one will have... What is the punishment? What's the karmic punishment? Does anyone know? Every hair of the cow, bull, or the calf. I mean, if you have to eat meat, eat chicken. Because then you only have to be gunned chicken once. It's pretty good. And let each chicken you eat. Just like Prabhupada said, Colonel Sanders. Anyone's heard of Colonel Sanders? He's the one who's the founder acharya of Kentucky KFC. Prabhupada said he will have to take a chicken birth and death for every chicken that's sold in every one of his places. That means you can go there and buy him right now if you have a if you see a chicken with an old man's head, then you know it's. So, but the point is that killing a cow, bull, calf is very sinful. So the coward boy said to Krishna, "You have killed a calf. Don't come near us. You know, you have to go to the Ganges." And so Krishna said, "All right, no problem." Created the Ganges out of his mind. Manasa Ganga, no problem. And so Krishna bathed in there. And many of the pastimes of Krishna occurred in the Manasa Ganga. There's one interesting pastime where Krishna wanted to trick the gopis. The gopis wanted to cross the Manasa Ganga since it's the largest body of water in Braj, other than the Jamuna River. And they were looking for a boat. But there was no boat there, and no boatman, except for a creaky old boat and a creaky old boatman. You know, and the boat, creaky old boatman, yeah, like that, you know, happened to be Krishna in disguise. So they went to him and they said, "Do you think you can take us across?" And these Christians said, "Yeah." "We'll take you across." So anyway, they got a little bit out into the Manasaganga, and Krishna said, "Oh, I'm tired. I need something to eat." And they were carrying all these milk products and everything like that. So they gave him the milk products, and Krishna ate. And he said, "Now I'm really tired." Because, you know, if you eat a lot of milk and sugar and stuff like that, it really knocks you out. So Krishna said, "I'm really tired, so I need a massage. You know, please, you know, massage my body." And they said, "Yeah, we're going to take your arms and legs and throw you out, so get rowing." That's what the gopis said to Krishna. And so then he kept rowing, and then there was, the boat started to sink. It had a little hole in it. It was an old boat. By Krishna's arrangement. So it started to sink, and then Krishna said, "Well, you're all too heavy. You got to start throwing things out." So they started to throw their milk products and everything out. And then Krishna said, and even their jewelry. And Krishna said, "All right, you take your clothes off and throw those out too." And they said, "No, we'll throw you out. So keep rowing." So keep rowing. And so then it was rocking back and forth, rocking back and forth. And they got so scared. And suddenly, Srimati Radharani saw the flute sticking out of the boatman's belt. And she said, "That's Krishna." And she went, she grabbed Krishna. A nice story. So many stories like that. So that's Manasaganga. I could tell more stories about it. So then from Manasaganga, you go, actually right at the Manasaganga, right next to Manasaganga, there's this place called Dangati. Heard of Dangati before? There's a temple there, Dangati. That means the path of taxes. And what happened is that Krishna would usually stop the gopis when they were walking to Govindakund to carry milk products for a sacrifice at Govindakund. And Krishna would try to extract taxes. He would dress up as a tax collector, and his friend Madhu Mangal would put on a mustache. And they would act like big tax collectors and threaten the gopis. There's so many. There's a Dhananibharta Komadi. There's so many books written by the acharyas about this particular pastime. So what happened is one time they were walking there and Krishna tried to extract taxes from them. And they said, "Who are you? You know, what gives you the right to take taxes?" And Krishna said, "I'm the king of Vrindavan," which is true. And they asked Vrinda, "Have you seen this boy before?" And Vrinda said, "No, I've never seen him before," which is a lie. And so they started to argue back and forth. "No, you have to pay taxes." And Krishna was ready to charge taxes, not only based on the milk products, but based, he said, for each part of Radharani's body, for your beautiful smile, you got to pay 10,000 rupees or something like that. A very romantic tax collector. Can you imagine that? You know, collecting taxes from some lady. For your beautiful eyes, you got to pay some diamonds, you know. So Krishna was going all over like that, telling Radharani that, you know, she had to pay for whatever her beauty was. And unlimited beauty, of course. And then eventually they started yelling and screaming, and Krishna said, "All right, you can leave Lalita as a hostage, and tomorrow you can pay the taxes." And they start yelling more and more. Finally, Purnamasi comes up, settles the whole thing, and says, "If they agree to come back tomorrow and pay the taxes, will you let them go?" And Krishna says, "Of course." So he lets them go. And they come back to the next day with like 10 million gopis and overpower the coward boys, tie them all to trees, threaten them with sticks. And poor Krishna is forced to bow down to Radharani's feet, you know, for begging forgiveness. So that's a Dangati. That happened at Dangati. And there's a kund, as you go around Govardhan, called Dhaninivartana Kund, which signifies the place where the taxes were paid, where Krishna had to pay the taxes ultimately. Krishna got caught. and I had to pay the taxes. So then, anyway, then you keep going around. There's so many other places that, because actually, I have a house at Govardhan, so I spend months there every year, so I know very well. If any of you are interested in the future, like in Kartik, we do regular tours every day around Govardhan and other places of Braj. I happen to be going there in about a week, in exactly a week. So anyway, so next place, prominent place, is Sankarshan Kund. Anyone's heard of Sankarshan Kund? Sankarshan Kund, that's Lord Balaram. So when Indra was trying to kill all the residents of Vrindavan, water was falling all over the place, but of course the water on Govardhan Hill was protected by the chakra, which was overhead. It dried up all the water. But the rest of the water fell on the rest of Braj, and Balaram gathered it all and kept it in this kund called Sankarshan Kund, which is right there. Right after you go through the village of Aniyor. Aniyor village is called Aniyor because it means give me more. Krishna's a greedy guy. During the Anakut ceremony, he kept asking for more and more and more, and finally they said there's no more. They gave him a tulsi leaf, and he said, all right, that's enough. And he was satisfied. That's why it's called Aniyor. Then, right after the village, too, there's this place called Govindakund. And Govindakund was formed when Indra was bathing Krishna after he realized his mistake in trying to kill all the residents of Vrindavan. That was the Abhishek. Then you go further around Govardhan, and you get to the Balaram Mukut Shila. Anyone seen that? Balaram Mukut Shila. It's right opposite what's called the Doka Dalji Temple on top of Govardhan. It's a pink temple on top of Govardhan. And in that's where Balaram stood and while he watched Krishna's rasa dance, and then he was so shocked that his mukut fell off and it imprinted the rock down there. So that's called the Balaram Mukut Shila, and also the Doka Dalji Temple, which is on top of Govardhan. Then you keep going around. We're going very quickly, more quickly than you would normally go. And then you get to the tail of Govardhan, and then all the different incarnations of the Lord reside on the tail of Govardhan. And there's Lord Nrsingadev. There's a giant temple of Lord Nrsingadev on the tail. Has anyone been to that temple? And Lord Nrsingadev? It's a big temple. You got to walk up some steps to the top there. And it's Ugra Nrsinga. Ugra means angry. He's tearing apart who? Hiranyakashipu. And there's a very nice family that runs that temple. They're good friends of mine. And so then, also right past the tail, there's a cave in which Radha and Krishna had their intimate pastimes. Manda Kandali Cave. Anyone's been there? See, you have to come with me next time. Take you to all these secret places. So, in that cave, you can go in the cave and chant Hare Krishna. It's a cave under Govardhan Hill. And chanting Hare Krishna is very ecstatic in that particular cave. All right, then quickly going around Govardhan, then we get to Surabhi Kund, where the transcendental Surabhi cow stored the milk when she was going to bathe Krishna when she came from the heavenly planets. And then also the Rudan Kund, which is the kund formed from Lord Shiva's tears when he saw Krishna in his rasa dance. And then finally, you get to this city of Yatipur, or Jatipur, depending on how you pronounce it. It means Madhavendrapuri's city. Actually, what we left out was that Madhavendrapuri found the deity Gopal in Aniyor, right near Aniyor. And there's there's a Shila there commemorating that particular place. So anyway, so now we're on the other side. We're in Jatipur, which is the city of Madhavendrapuri. And in that city, there is if anyone's a member of the Balabhacharya sect, there's the mouth of Govardhan there, that the members of the Balabhacharya sect, the Pushti Marg sect, consider that to be the mouth of Govardhan. And there's also the Dandavat Shila there. That means if you've made any offenses, you offer Dandavats to the Shila, and you get freed from the offenses. Then you leave that city, and then you head back to the city of Govardhan, where we started, but now we go to the upper half of Govardhan. And after, you leave, the city of Govardhana, and actually the first prominent thing you see, there's one thing we don't even like to mention, which is called Sakhistali, which is the place of Chandravali. So that's Radharani's competitor, so we won't talk about that at all. One time there was Sanatan Goswami was sitting near Govardhan, and some young boy brought him some milk. And he said, "Where have you brought this milk from?" And he said, "Sakhistali," and he started to chase the boy with a stick to hit him. Because with the Vaishnavas, they're always taking the side of Radharani. And when they hear Chandravali's name, that disturbs them a little bit. Of course, Chandravali is an expansion of Radharani, who serves Krishna in that capacity, or serves Radharani in that capacity to increase the spices of Radharani and Krishna loving affairs. Like you need spicing. Like if you eat prasad and no spices, it's very bland, right? Like if someone just gives you boiled sabji, not very interesting. Boiled sabji, you. But you have to put some hot peppers in, asafoetida, cumin, coriander, and everything. Then it becomes very tasty. Masala, right? So then after passing there, then you get to this Uddhava Kund. I'm sure many of you have been to this Uddhava Kund. That's one of the most famous places. And that Uddhava Kund is where Uddhava resides as grass. When he saw the love the gopis had for Krishna, he prayed to Krishna to reside as grass always so that the gopis would walk over him, grass and dust. So it's a very beautiful Uddhava Kund, Uddhava temple, and their deities there are called Uddhava Vihari. And that temple was taken care of by a pujari, a good friend of mine. His name is Giriraj. He's a Brajavasi, like 10th generation, maybe 100th generation. His father did 1,000 parikramas around Govardhan to get him as a son. Pure devotee. He's actually a great devotee. And so then eventually after that you run into Radhakund and Shyamakund. And we don't need to tell the story about that, except that those two kunds were dug after Krishna killed the Rishtasura demon. And then you round the other side, you get to Kushima Sarovara. And also Nardakund, which is right near Kushima Sarovara. And then you get back to the city of Govardhan again. So great Vaishnavas, they circumambulate Govardhan every day. And some Vaishnavas circumambulate Govardhan with dandavats, dandavat parikrama, and some Vaishnavas do 108 dandavat parikramas. That means 108 dandavats in each spot, and then they move on to the next spot, and some Vaishnavas do 1,008 in one spot. And they move. That's amazing, isn't it? That means practically for 30 years you're going to do that. But you can look at them and say, "Oh, it's too austere for me," but they're experiencing so much happiness. What's happening internally? You may say, you know, I'm happier with my, you know, cable TV and everything like that. I couldn't give it up. You know, maybe if they gave me cable TV while I was doing dandavats, I could do it. You know, if I could take my iPod with me, you know, listen to music, you know, I'd be able to do it. But these devotees, although they appear ordinary, these are great personalities. Every resident of the Holy Dham, and that is everyone who was born there, resides there for more than a fortnight, is considered to be a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even the monkeys. Prabhupada said something that wasn't so popular. He said that the monkeys and pigs were sannyasis who didn't follow the regulative principles too strictly in their last lives. When some of the people who weren't so strict heard that, they got very upset. And when the devotees published that in our Back to Godhead magazine, they got even more upset. You know, they published this, what Prabhupada said. You know, it's true. It's true. So when I go around Govardhan, you know, I usually say to the monkeys, "Maharaj." Hare Krishna. joking with them. Of course, Prabhupada said, don't make friends with the monkeys. Don't make them enemies. Don't make them friends. So every resident there, everybody who's there is going back to Godhead. Even the monkeys. Prabhupada said, one life is monkeys or dogs, then back to Godhead. So one has to be very careful when you go there, because the holy Dhamma of the Lord is covered. There's this word called veneer. Veneer means like a thin covering. For example, if you buy some really cheap furniture, I'm not going to look around. restrain myself. Then, no, that's good furniture. But this is nice. This is real wood, I think. So if you buy cheap furniture, it has like real like wood chips. It's made of wood chips, but they put something on top so it looks like fine oak. You understand? The fine oak is the veneer. But when you get underneath, you see it's wood chips. So it's the opposite with Krishna's holy land. There's a veneer, a covering of yogamaya that keeps the rascals, like us, from seeing what's actually happening there, Krishna's pastimes. So you may go there, or someone goes there, and they just see a bunch of pigs running around, and monkeys running around, and dirt, and everything like that. I mean, that is there. But there is something underneath the surface. There's Krishna's unmanifest pastimes, and the residents there, they all love Krishna. They all love Krishna. And so one has to be very careful when they go to the holy Dham not to get angry or offend anybody there. I mean, there may be a tendency, like when you go to some of the holy places, you've got the pandas, and they all have their hands out, you know. You know, donation, 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 or whatever. Even they hold on to your clothes and they'll let you go. Not me. They don't do that to me, but they do that to other people. One time, they learned their lesson, because one time one of them came to me. This was in the city of Jatipur. He came to me and said, you have to give something. And I said, you're in the wrong city. This is Jatipur. I'm a sannyasi. You're a householder. You should give me a donation. And they never bothered me after that. But so, seriously speaking, all the residents, you have to have some great, great reverence for them. Because you should never offend them, even the animals there, because they're all great personalities. To be born, to live, to even visit Vrindavan takes so much punya. It's unbelievable. So therefore, there's this caution against offending the residents of the holy Dham. So you should go there and serve them. And if some of them act in such a way that, you know, it's not so agreeable to you, just ignore it at that particular point. So therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommended that one only go there for 2 weeks at a time. A fortnight, because then there's a tendency to become complacent in the holy Dham, not reverent anymore to the holy Dham. So that's Vrindavan, Govardhan, Radhakund, Shyamakund, and the Jamuna. So let's take questions now, actually, because I can go through the whole thing, and I've only gone through two verses, and there's 10 verses in this poem. So any questions or comments?
Thank you very much for the one.
Okay.
Whereas Lord Shiva, he is mentioned as a Kshetrapal for all the right. Krishna things. And everywhere we see one Lord Shiva temple outside the holy dams.
Mm-hmm.
But throughout Indian history especially, we see many attackers coming and destroying the temples, throwing the deities out, robbing the temple, and even killing the
Vaishnavas. Yeah.
So if Lord Shiva is the protector, first level of defense, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why he is allowing all these things to happen, at least externally?
Well, one reason is that in Kali Yuga, there's many people who shouldn't be in the holy Dham. And the holy place, people go to the holy places generally to dump off their sins. This is described in the Bhagavatam. That this is described in the conversation with the Ganges with Bhagirath. That the Ganges is saying, I'm not going down to the earth planet. It's not a good idea. Because if I go down there, all these rascals are going to bathe in me. And so Bhagirath says, no, not only the rascals will bathe in you, some good guys, some sadhus will bathe in you, and they will absorb all that bad stuff. So in Kali Yuga, there's a lot of
things that are going on in the Holy Dham shouldn't be going on in the Holy Dham. And that could be understood as one of the reasons. Another reason is that if one gets injured or gets killed defending the Holy Dham, one goes back to Godhead too. So there's an opportunity for the devotee, that's the type of service, to render. And it's basically Krishna's plan to help devotees understand, whether they're in the Holy Dham or not, to take shelter of his holy names, because that's the Yuga Dharma. So when the devotees are attacked, anything's attacked, people take shelter of the Holy Dham. Also, another reason is, it's Krishna's plan so the deities will move elsewhere so other people will get darshan. Like you have Radha Govindaji, who's in Jaipur right now. And it's interesting, they would never be in Jaipur if it wasn't for the Muslims. Right? Radha Gopinath and Nachi was taken out. Nachi was originally, that's the deity that was installed by Madhavendra Puri. So now these deities are all over India. So look at it. You know, so there's a greater plan that's taking place right there. And the devotees who leave their bodies defending Krishna, they go back to Godhead. So no, devotees are never the loser, never the losers. And so there's other things, there's things that Krishna has planned underneath the surface there. Why that happened. I guess it's part of spreading Krishna consciousness, deities everywhere. It's interesting. Thank you for the question. Interesting question. So also it indicates that we have to protect Krishna's temples. Certainly Lord Shiva is there, but Lord Shiva sometimes gets upset with the devotees if they're not following strictly. Everywhere you go in Vrindavan, you'll actually see Lord Shiva as a Dikpala, the protector of the different directions. Gopishra Mahadev, Chakaleshra Mahadev, Kundeshra Mahadev. That means Lord Shiva is protecting Radha Kund area. And Lord Shiva actually became a gopi to see Krishna's intimate pastimes in Vrindavan. As Gopishra Mahadev. And Narada Muni also became a gopi. He was Naradi. Naradi. What happened? The story about that was that Narada Muni wanted to see Krishna's Rasa Leela dance, and he wasn't allowed in by Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva said, you have to become a female to enter and see this Rasa dance. So he'd go bathing in Kushima Sarovara. So he bathed in Kushima Sarovara and came out as Naradi. And when Lord Krishna saw him, he said, Narada Muni, what are you doing here? And Narada Muni said, how did you recognize me? And Krishna said, you have certain distinctive characteristics. And Krishna said, all right, now you have to stay here and write some literatures about me, Narada Bhakti Sutra and the Narada Pancharatra. And Narada Muni said, I can't because I've been cursed to keep traveling. And Krishna said, this is not the material world. Curses don't apply here. So therefore, Narada Muni established his ashram right near Kushima Sarovara. It's called Narada Kund. And in Narada Kund, he also entertained and preached to Kayadu, who was Pallad Maharaj's mother, Hiranyakashipu's wife. So that's the Narada Kund, Narada ashram there. Good question. So, any other questions?
You mentioned about the peacock feather. So, what's the story or Leela behind Krishna being so attracted to the peacock feather that he puts it on his head?
I don't remember the exact story, but the peacock dances. And there's a kutir right next to Barshana called Moor Kutir. You've been there? Moor Kutir. And that means, that, of course, peacock kutir. So what happened is that Krishna was meeting with Radharani up there. And then Radharani's so-called husband and mother-in-law, that's Jatila and Abhimanyu, came and thought they were going to catch him in the act, and Krishna transformed himself into a peacock. And Radharani was sitting there with his peacock on her lap. And they thought, you know, what's the problem? She just has a peacock on her lap. And then when they left, Krishna became Krishna again. So the peacock dances, he's very beautiful. And Krishna always wears a peacock feather. As far as why Krishna wears a peacock feather, he likes it. There must be some story somewhere. But when we talk about Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he's called Sarva Karna Karanam, the cause of all causes, there's no real cause behind why he does something other than he wants it. When we do something, there's actually a cause behind it. Like if you like something, it's usually because of your psychological makeup, what happened in your childhood. I mean, for example, there's certain things I don't like beet soup, because my mother used to force me to drink it. If you put it in front of me, I will run away. Beetroot soup. So, you know, there's a reason for that. So just like a psychologist, she'll analyze someone. You know, why do you have this problem? Why do you have that problem? How did your mother treat you when you were a child? Did she give you beet soup? You know, why don't you like it? So with Krishna, what he does is because he likes to do it. He's aptakama, swarat, that means he's independent. And all his desires are fulfilled. So whatever he does, is the reason is he likes to do it. And he can do whatever he wants, whenever he wants, with whoever he wants, and nobody can argue with him about that. He's independent, swarat. He's independent. So he's the independent supreme. So if he likes to wear a peacock feather, that's fine. If he likes to steal, that's fine. Likes to pinch babies, that's all right. You know, that's Krishna. He can do anything he wants. The independent supreme personality of Godhead. But we can't. We're limited. Krishna has multifarious energies, and all of his energies are his servants, and they all do what he wants immediately. They're first-class servants. You know, first-class, does anyone know the difference between a first-class servant, second-class servant, third-class servant, or a tenth-class servant?
First-class servant does without even being asked.
He knows the master's intention, mood.
Second-class is asked and gladly does it. Third-class is asked, does it begrudgingly.
Yeah, and tenth-class doesn't do it. So we have examples of all these different classes. So we should be first-class servants of Krishna. That's why it's described about Rupa Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam, Stapitam Yena Bhutale, Swayam Rupa Gadava Mayam Dadati Swapadantika. Manobhishtam, he knows the intention of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So therefore, he's our acharya. You know, we're Rupa Nugas. Because Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam, Stapitam Yena Bhutale. So, any other questions?
Can I share something?
Yeah, sure.
Regarding this peacock, somebody told me when I was sometime few years ago that it is one of the species that a male peacock and the female peacock never physically come together to procreate because they have their senses so much in control. Krishna likes it.
I think I've seen them come together. I hate to talk about it, but I spent a lot of time in Vrindavan, and I used to live with peacocks. It's a funny story. Many years ago, I was in charge of our Miami center, and we had peacocks there. And whenever it was the mating season, that of course, then the male peacocks. It's interesting in many species that the males are actually more beautiful than the females. It's interesting. In the human species, it's the opposite. You know, the men are ugly and the women are attractive. So, so the... No,
just teasing. So what we'd see in the mating season is that the peacocks, whenever they were stimulated, you know, got lusty, usually a peahen, but sometimes even a human being. So they would become like a radar screen. You know, at the airport. And they would, you know, face the peahen usually. And I got attacked by them, so not that they wanted me, but I knew that they didn't just look. They were angry, because when one's lusty, one gets angry. They were actually very angry. Like you said, a bull. When a bull is lusty, anyone's taken care of cows or bulls before? Yeah, so you know. When there's female cows around there and they're in heat, you stay away. The bull can crash down the fence, a brick wall, or anything to get to those female cows. True. And the bulls are dangerous. Extremely dangerous. That's why we like oxen instead of bulls. So the peacock, yeah, he would definitely come in contact. I saw it myself. So, and they were angry
maybe
as any.
Maybe.
Maybe in Goloka, but in Goloka there is no lust anyway. None of the animals have lust. But talking about peacocks, at least the ones I've come in contact with, they definitely. We're not brahmacharis. No, I didn't run into any saffron-colored peacocks. Peacock Maharaj. So, all right, yeah, I hope I cleared that up. But this. So, another question?
You mentioned that from lust, anger, greed, illusion, fear,
envy, I left out envy, yeah.
All those things, so much anxiety and disturbance is there. But then you also mentioned that when you gain Krishna prema, that you're in anxiety when Krishna is in front of you because he's going to leave.
Yes.
And then when he's gone, you're in anxiety.
But that's ecstatic anxiety. You have to experience it.
Can you explain?
That's happiness. Can I explain it? Can you explain how something tastes unless you taste it? Can I explain what something sweet tastes like? But it's so much happiness because you're connected. The point is the connection. By remembrance of Krishna, you're connected with him. Even if Krishna's not present, chanting his holy names, remembering him, worshiping his deity, you're with him, 100%. Now, in this material world, even if you're physically, if your body is physically in the same room as someone else, you're not with them because there's no meeting of minds. We were talking about this other day in regard to rasa. In this material world, Prabhupada said, it's very interesting, Prabhupada said, you have to, even material rasas have to be exchanged with only members of your same species. So sometimes people think, well, I'm exchanging rasas with my dog. He loves me, I love him. So, but they don't know what the dog is thinking. There's actually no meeting of minds with the dog, fortunately. But, and sometimes the master starts to look like the dog after a while. But, I'll give this example. So, like, the dog is licking, not you, obviously, but let's say it's a rhetorical example. The dog is licking someone, and you're thinking, oh, love. But the dog is just tasting you. Because he likes the salt in the nose. And so if you go certain places where people die and the dogs, anyway, attack the bodies, the nose is the first part they eat. So you're thinking one thing. You're thinking love, 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 and the dog is thinking eat, eat, eat. You know, that's not a rasa. That's not an exchange of rasas. One exchanges rasas when one is on the same wavelength as the other person. That's when you develop a deep relationship. Not when you're thinking one thing and the other person is thinking something completely different and there's no meeting of minds.
So that can only happen in the material world. That can happen to a certain extent between two entities, two human beings, the same species. And in the spiritual realm, it happens because Krishna and the living entity, they're completely synchronized with each other. You know, Krishna is thinking of pleasing his devotee, and the devotee is thinking of pleasing Krishna. Krishna becomes controlled, like by Radharani, of course, by pure devotional service, according to Rupa Goswami. And the devotee is controlled by Krishna, by love of Krishna. So there's always exchange of rasa. You're always with, a devotee is never separated from Krishna, because he's thinking of Krishna. The thought of Krishna is the same as Krishna. But when you're with someone physically, even you're shaking their hand, you're not touching them. You're not touching them, shaking their hand. It's just the body, which is a machine. It's like virtual reality. It's like that... anyway, it's like that movie, The Matrix. I don't know if you saw that movie. You know, that's it. You're just plugged in. You know, somehow, somewhere your soul, through the subtle body, is just plugged into this gross thing. And you're moving and thinking that you're... That's you, and you're shaking someone's hand, saying, I'm shaking your hand, I'm seeing you. But even scientifically, when I say I'm seeing you, what am I actually seeing? I mean, think about it. You know, if you look scientifically, like there's photons or whatever, hitting the eye, going through the vitreous humor, all the way back to the retina, and then there's electrochemical impulses transmitted through the optic nerve to the other side of the brain. And then there's all these other, isn't it, all these nerve impulses, you're shooting back and forth. And then finally, you know, through several layers, you're actually perceiving something. But it's through several different mechanisms that you're actually, it's very indirect that I'm seeing you. Although it appears to be direct. Just like when I was young, television was first invented. And I thought there were little people inside. I really thought so. I mean, the television, it was like a round black and white tube. Anyone remember that? You know, in the old days? And I thought, wow, if I just break it open, they're going to, I'm directly seeing these people. I'm going to pull out Ed Sullivan or whoever else was inside. Or the Beatles, you know, whoever else was inside there. No, that was after that time. But it wasn't. It was very indirect. Television is very indirect. I mean, you got the camera, you got the, you know, the cable TV or however it's transmitted. So it's the same thing. Our perception is going through levels of filters and different mechanisms. So I'm not actually coming in contact with you in a physical sense. So there's no real meeting you unless there's a meeting of minds, of consciousness. So when you actually are Krishna conscious, your consciousness is meeting Krishna 24 hours a day. So even when you're feeling separation, it's just like, it's love. And you're in, and because that's the highest enjoyment. Like Prabhupada said, we all have a loving propensity. He says this in the Krishna book in the beginning. And this loving propensity wants to be expressed in an unlimited way. And in this world, it just hits the wall after a while. Isn't it? Prabhupada says, like shining a light inside a box. It just doesn't go very far. So we want it to go on unlimitedly. Just like people think like that. I mean, you watch some Bollywood films, Eternal Love or whatever it is, and they're dancing in the Bombay railway station, you know, I think there's isn't it? I remember seeing that, you know. This is love, joining hands, you know, or for, live forever after or something like that. But it doesn't go on. It's like this new euphoria I was talking about the whole beginning. It doesn't go on forever. It stops. And you want it to go on. And you're dissatisfied because it's not going on. But the intensity of love for Krishna increases in its depth and width and breadth continually, unlimitedly. And that's what satisfies you, that loving mood. Even if even the loving mood is calling, ostensibly it's causing pain because you're feeling separation. Krishna, feeling your separation, I'm considering a moment to be like 12 years or more. Or literally the Sanskrit says yuga, like a yuga, like millions of years. Yugayitam nimishena chakshusha prabhashayitam shunyayitam jagat sarvam govinda virahename. You know, just a moment. You imagine how much pain? And the gopis were in pain because they blinked their eyes. Can you imagine? I don't even notice I'm blinking. I know I'm doing it as I'm talking. Everyone is blinking their eyes. Do we notice it? No, I mean, it's nothing. It's just like Nimishane. I mean, it's just like an instant. We don't know. Now I'm noticing it. Now I'm becoming too conscious of my eyes. But anyway, so, but can you imagine how much love there is? It's so painful that the gopis are begging to have eyes like fish, because the fish eyes have no eyelids. And they're cursing Lord Brahma, because he created eyes with eyelids, right? Even a moment separation. I was reading the Brihad Bhagavatamrita that when Krishna goes out to pasture the cows, all the residents who have to stay back of Vrindavan, they're just standing there all day long looking at the path, waiting for Krishna to come back. And when Krishna comes back and it becomes nighttime, all the deer just remain there at the edge of the Vrindavan town, looking at Vrindavan town, waiting for Krishna to come out the next day. And all the birds just keep circling overhead, just waiting for, because they can't see Krishna in the dark. Waiting. Can you imagine how much love that is? And that love is so pleasing to the heart, even if it's intense, painful. Right? I mean, just like, I mean, even there's songs in the mundane world about, you know, I miss my lover and whatever it is. Like in America, there's country western songs. So, you have another question?
Yeah, I just recently read this story on the internet. This dog, the dog was a canine officer.
Yeah.
And his master, who trained him, he passed away.
Yeah.
And he came to the, they took him to the, his great, whatever you call it. The
great funeral home? Or
funeral home.
Yeah, right. For dogs.
And he wouldn't leave. I mean, he just...
The master.
The master.
Yeah, he's very attached.
Very attached, and then he would come back again. So it's like, would you consider that as a meeting of mind?
No, because the dog really wasn't thinking the same thing he was. I mean, he projects. There's this whole point, in Sanskrit it's called Atmavat Manyate Jagat. Anyone heard that? We see the whole world as ourselves. So I think, when I see you doing something, I think you're doing it for the same reason I'm doing it. I would do it if I was in a similar situation. But it's not really. You have different motives. That causes a lot of conflicts in this world when we accuse someone of something. Hey, you were nasty. But maybe they weren't nasty. Maybe they're just insecure. But we're just saying, if I was in that situation, I'd be acting and thinking like that. So even among human beings, you don't have that meeting of minds in most cases. What to speak of with the dog. But the difficulty is he will have a meeting of minds with dogs after some time. Because he will become a dog in his next life. Like that story, we've just been reading the story of Bharat Maharaj. You know the story of Bharat Maharaj? In the Bhagavatam. Bharat Maharaj was a king. And he left everything, his whole kingdom, just to be a nice sannyasi. And so he was meditating and everything like that. And then all of a sudden, Mother Deer is frightened by a lion. And she gives birth to a little baby deer. And the mother dies in the process. And what happens is that Bharat Maharaj starts to take care of the deer, which is all right. I mean, if someone puts a deer in your house, you should take care of it. But, yes, why not? Actually, there's stories where devotees do take care of animals, because if someone takes shelter, you have to take care. Not that you have to take him into bed with you. But but Bharat Maharaj literally did that. While he was chanting, he was just... not even paying attention to his chanting. He was looking for the deer. He was kissing the deer. Doing so many things. He actually lost his whole focus on spiritual life. Neglected it. And finally, when the deer... he couldn't find the deer. He went out looking for the deer. Feeling the deer's separation like a moment was like 12 years or more. He was completely absorbed in the deer. And after some time, he died and he took birth. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam yashityante kalevaram. Tam tam evaiti kontiya siddhatad bhava bhavata. He took birth as a deer. But he was a pretty intelligent deer. And he didn't associate with too many other deer. He associated with his old guru. He went to his guru's ashram. And his guru said, what's this deer doing here? But the deer kept coming back for Bhagavatam class. And sometimes we see that. I've seen many times there have been... dogs that come And this happens in India a lot, too. They'll stand right outside the temple. They know they can't come in. And they'll just stand there whenever it's time for kirtan and listen to the kirtan. And they know they can't come in because somehow they made a spiritual mistake in their last lives when they were a human being. And they're remembering their past devotional service. So same thing with Bart Maharaj. He remembered that. Now, as far as a meeting of minds, no, the deer and Bart Maharaj never had a meeting of minds. It's explicitly described in the Bhagavatam that Bart Maharaj was thinking of the deer like a prince. He was thinking, oh, you're feeling disappointed with me, you don't love me, I didn't pay enough attention to you, things like that. But that's not what the deer was thinking. The deer was just thinking, you know, where can I get something to eat? So there's, to have a meeting of minds, there has to be communication also. At least in this world, unless you happen to be such a psychic, you can psychically connect with someone, which is highly unusual. Like Avatar or something like that. You can plug your tail into someone else. You remember that movie? Wait, they take their hair and plug it in, you know. Right? You saw that? That's the only movie I went to. He forced me to go. So
I wonder why they made these avatars blue.
Yeah, well, actually they had studied the Vedic literatures and they took some...
That's what I thought, yeah.
They took some... I mean, even the word avatar, of course that's a Sanskrit word, but they didn't use the word properly. Word avatar means to cross down or to come down. You know, avatara means to cross. Like tara means to cross, and avat means to downward crossing. And just like you have the word tirtha, which means a crossing place where you can cross up. And so avatara means to cross down. So that, technically speaking, they didn't use the word properly according to linguistics. But, you know, they did study some Vedic literatures. And, yeah. But Krishna didn't look exactly like that, so. And the movies. But so let's say, hypothetically, if you could do something like that, you know, plug your hair into someone else, then you, then you may be able to have a meeting of minds. But seriously, unless you're actually completely connected with Krishna and with the pure devotees, there's never a 100% meeting of minds that way. 100% exchange. Then there's different expectations. Like you find in mundane relationships, people have one expectation of the other person, the person has another expectation of you, and therefore you have conflicts. So any other questions or comments? Yes.
Is there a specific reason why we don't eat onion and garlic?
Yes, very good reason. There are different foods in different modes of nature. Krishna talks about this in the Gita, that there's foods in the mode of goodness, foods in the mode of passion, foods in the mode of ignorance. Foods in the mode of passion are too hot, spicy, stuff like that. Foods in the mode of ignorance are putrid, stale, decomposed, and stuff like that. And goodness actually increased the health of the body. Are recently cooked, not too old. So according to the Ayurvedic science, different foods affect the consciousness in different ways. So onions and garlic, I mean, let's say garlic, for example. Garlic really brings one down to the mode of ignorance when one takes it. And not only that, it smells bad. It's really bad smell. I mean, if you don't eat it and you smell it on someone's breath, woo! I remember one time, here's a funny story. One time we had to, garlic is also a medicine. It's an Ayurvedic medicine. One time we had a devotee with a severe infection called MRSA. That means a resistant, antibiotic-resistant infection. Yeah, I can't pronounce it. You're better at me. So anyway, MRSA, MRSA. So basically the doctors wanted to cut her arm off because it was growing up the arm. So I told her, you know, eat garlic raw. And it was gone within a week. The doctors were shocked. But she couldn't come to the temple. Nobody could go near her for a month after that. it worked. Another time, one of our devotees had to go on Sankirtan in a van with all the other devotees, and they had to take it for medicine. And all the other devotees had to ride the van with their heads sticking out. Because someone whose senses are very much attuned, I mean, that purified senses, it really smells bad. It really smells bad. I mean,
What's the restriction on mushroom? Mushrooms
are all right. They're not generally offered, but Prabhupada said they're not prohibited. Although some devotees will tell you they're prohibited. The reason Prabhupada said that they're generally not all right is because they were generally used to be grown in dirty places. Nowadays, they're grown in more controlled environments, especially when they're sold in the store. So I wouldn't offer them to Radha and Krishna, but there's a certain nutritional, you know, if someone has a nutritional deficiency. If, for example, I was just reading, because I'm studying a lot of health-related things to help devotees, that if you expose certain types of mushrooms to light after they're picked, then they will actually produce vitamin D, which is hard for a vegetarian to get generally, vitamin D. So we don't want to take fish oil, so it's a good substitute for fish oil.
Or you can stay in the sun.
Yeah, which is better. I mean, which is better. Instead of eating mushrooms, just sit in the sun, take a nice walk in the sun. But anyway, there are certain health benefits to that. So I personally don't prohibit people from mushrooms. But they're not offerable to the deities. But if someone has some health reason why they want to take them, it's not a prohibition like onions and garlic. And onions and garlic bring you down to the mode of ignorance. And I've seen it. When people take them, their consciousness becomes diminished, not so finely attuned. And that's the reason. Although there are medicinal uses for both things. In the Ayurvedic tradition, there are medicinal uses for practically everything. So they're not prohibited per se, but they're prohibited as far as foodstuffs are concerned. I mean, there's also some indication that garlic can help if you have high blood pressure. There's some, you know, someone has very high blood pressure, they may want to take garlic pills to help with that. So they're prohibited as a food and they can't be offered to Krishna, garlic and onions. And onions make you cry. I remember when I was young, my mother would cut onions and I would start crying because of them. Okay? So they affect the consciousness. Like anything that affects the consciousness in a negative way, and the modes of nature, like the modes of nature, karanam gunasangasya sadasa janma jonishu. Krishna says the cause of our entanglement is gunasanga, associating with modes of nature. So there's food in different modes, there's activities in different modes of nature, you know, and affects the consciousness. I mean, just like certain sporting games, which shall remain nameless, because I don't want to offend anyone here. Just like you had some bowl game, I won't mention what it was. I mean, it's not that it puts you in sattva by watching it. I mean, I'm not going to condemn anyone for doing it, but when you do it, it certainly doesn't put you in the mode of goodness. I mean, do you feel all good and Krishna conscious after watching it? Have you ever watched people watching football game, American football? I'm not criticizing cricket. So if you ever watch people watching American football, they start to emulate the players after some time. You know, it's like, get him, you know. I see that because I go through airports regularly, and then they have these bars, you know, sports bars there, and I watch the men, because usually men, not too many women there, not too many women going, get him. And nowadays more, yeah. Well, it's liberation. So, it puts people in the mode of passion and ignorance. Kill them. Did you hear that? Yeah. Kill them. And then, Hare Krishna. So pure. Purifying your consciousness, I mean, just like if you want to keep something clean and you throw dirt on it. Is that so intelligent? You know, I'd like to keep, keep things clean rather than just having to clean it every day, scrub it a lot. Isn't it? An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So we try to keep our conscience clean because we can enjoy more. We can think of Krishna more. We can be more peaceful. Because obviously if someone's watching a football game, kill it, kill it, kill it. Or kill him, sorry. You can see I haven't watched a football game in a long time. So kill him, kill him. Then he'll come home to greet his wife. She'll say, honey, what did you do today? Where's the food? It's like, you know, like a caveman. Me, Tarzan. You, Jane. I don't know if you ever saw you ever see a Tarzan movie like that? Yeah, you've seen some of those things. You know, then you've got an aborigine walking in your house. It's like when someone's drunk. I mean, it's something, you know, the media is a form of intoxication nowadays.
Pretty much.
Yeah, it's like intoxication. You don't need to drink anymore. You just sit in front of the, what we call the boob tube. Boob means idiot. And you just sit there all, and it's completely non-participatory, and you just like, huh? And the only time you get up is like during the commercials or something. And the as far as exercise, you got to get one of these exercise machines that stimulates your muscles by when you're sitting down, you know. They have, I know, I've seen them. When I joke, I'm actually telling things I perceive. That you put these little things on your muscles and it automatically stimulates you so you're when you're watching the football game. And then because people are not engaged naturally, they have to go to the gym. Because they don't know how to walk anymore. So they have to go on a walk. They have to go on a machine treadmill to learn how to walk. Or a stepper to learn how to climb steps. I take a walk every day. I go, most days I go 6 miles. I walk 6 miles. On Ekadasi, I usually walk 14 miles because I'm chanting the whole time. I chant 64 rounds. And usually I'm the only one on the street. It's amazing, in America especially, how lazy people have become. So we want our consciousness to be pure so we engage in pure activities of chanting, hearing, reading about Krishna, and the consciousness remains pure. Yeah.
Are there any different modes of foods are mentioned in the shastras?
Yes. Well, Krishna gives a brief overview of them in the Gita. But then later on in the Manusamhita, there's some more description of foods that are vikarmic, you know, foods specifically prohibited. So there are different foods mentioned in different shastras. Manusamhita, the Gita is just a very brief overview of the foods. But I think Manusamhita goes into more depth. And some of the Vaishnav literatures, like the Hari Bhakti Vilas, go into even greater detail about it. But Hari Bhakti Vilas, some of it was written to deal with ritualistic brahmanas. So there's certain injunctions in the Hari Bhakti Vilas we don't follow such. The Hari Bhakti Vilas says don't eat carrots. And we do eat carrots. Prabhupada ate carrots. And the reason for that was because ritualistic brahmanas in India traditionally never ate carrots. The reason for that is it says in some of the older Vedas that because the carrots you get in India are blood red, they're considered like the bones and blood of a sage, so you don't eat them. But the carrots we get in America are yellow, orange color. So it's different. So Prabhupada did eat carrots. So certain injunctions have to be applied by the Acharya. Srila Prabhupada, of course, is our founder Acharya, and he applies them according to time, place, and circumstance. I mean, there's certain things in the Shastras that we can't follow. Like, for example, one of the things in the Shastras is that a sannyasi can't ride in a car, can't cross oceans. And, you know, I couldn't get here if it wasn't for that. I probably wouldn't have come here either if he followed that injunction. Or the vanaprastas have to wear tree bark clothes. You're not a vanaprasta. Have to wear tree bark clothes or... vanaprastas are not allowed to cut their nails or hair either. Can you imagine that? So, I mean, but that was for a certain time, place, and circumstance. Many of the injunctions in the Shastras are for time, place, and circumstances rather than for all times. So nowadays in Kali Yuga, Kali, Kalera, Dharma, Krishna, Nam, Sankirtan, the Yuga Dharma is Krishna, Nam, Sankirtan. Ekon Dharma, there's one Dharma, is Krishna, Nam, Sankirtan. So basically we do what facilitates the chanting of the Lord's holy names, and we avoid things insofar as possible to put the consciousness in lower modes of nature. Yeah, it depends on you. I'm not condemning anyone for doing anything, but if you want your consciousness to get purified more quickly, there is a method to do it. That's all. I mean, if someone doesn't want, someone wants to take the slow path, that's their prerogative. Any other questions? Yeah.
You mentioned that when gopis and Radharani, they were searching. Expecting that pain and that love. So how could they live that long until, how could they wait that much, 86 years? How did they do that?
Because there's different descriptions of the Acharyas. I mean, one is that they're very mood of separation, connected them so much with Krishna. Because separation, one thinks of the beloved more than you would when you're meeting them. When you're with them, you're with them. You know, it's nice, of course, when you're with Krishna, it's super nice. But when you're separated, then you're with Krishna. It's hard to explain because the thought of Krishna is the same as Krishna. And the name of Krishna is the same as Krishna. The remembrance of Krishna's pastimes is the same as Krishna. So the connection with Krishna was closer. And that was what maintained them and sustained them. However, there is a story in the Lita Madhava by Srila Rupa Goswami that talks about Radharani's separation from Krishna when Krishna left Vrindavan. This is a very elevated story. It's a play written by Srila Rupa Goswami that when Krishna left Vrindavan, she jumped into the Jamuna. And she committed suicide. And then she went up to the sun planet. I'm going to just tell the story in brief because it's a several hour story. She went up to the sun planet, and later on, she was given by the sun god to Satrajit as his daughter, along with a jewel called the Shaimanchaka jewel that was previously from the Shankachuta demon, who was an associate of Kuvera. And that Satrajit's daughter, whose name was Satyabhama, was given to Krishna. And so Radharani expanded as Satyabhama to be with Krishna and Dwarka. But there was an interesting part of that story is that Krishna first married who? Rukmini. And he made a promise to Rukmini that, what? Does anyone remember the story? When he got married to Rukmini, what was the promise he made? He would not marry anyone else without her permission. So along comes Satyabhama. And Rukmini is thinking, when Krishna sees her, because Rukmini is an expansion of Chandrabali in Krishna's pastimes. So Rukmini is thinking when Krishna sees her, you know, we're going to be in trouble. So let's keep her in this place called Nava Vrindavan, which basically means New Vrindavan, not in West Virginia, but which is part of Dwarka, which is connected with Dwarka. So let's keep her in this place. So in this Nava Vrindavan forest, there is a deity of Krishna, Nanda Kumar, Krishna playing a flute, Vanamali. So Krishna's playing a flute. This is a deity. So she starts to decorate this deity very beautifully, feeling separation from Krishna. Then Krishna comes into the forest and she hears him coming. She's not interested in him in the beginning because she doesn't know that Dwarkadish is the same as Brajendra Nandana. She's thinking he may be a nice person, but he's not my Brajendra Nandana. So she goes and hides in the forest because she hears him coming. And then Krishna sees this deity of himself And he thinks, who has decorated this deity so nicely? Wow, it must be a great devotee of mine. So I'm going to see who did it. So then Krishna takes the deity, puts the deity in the bushes, and assumes the same posture as the deity, puts on the same jewelry and everything as the deity, like that, and just freezes there. Then Satyabhama comes out, and she starts decorating the deity, and she says, this deity was made very nicely by Vishwakarma. And so Krishna, she starts, and then Krishna thinks that she's a deity, because in this Nava Vrindavan, there's actually replicas of Radharani too, you know, made by Vishwakarma. So Krishna, and she's speaking, and Krishna says, boy, Vishwakarma makes deities that speak here. And Radharani is thinking, wow, Vishwakarma makes deities that speak. And so eventually I discover they're the real persons. Yeah, the real Krishna. And Radharani, or Krishna and Satyabhama. And so they start meeting secretly, without Rukmini knowing about it, in this Nava Vrindavan forest. Has anyone read this book? This Lalita Madhava? You've heard. I have a whole recording of it that I've done. It's available on the internet. It's on, what is that site that I have all my stuff on? No, not PK Goswami. PK Goswami is a link to it, but it's IskonDesireTree.com. All this stuff is there, so if you ever want to hear this, the whole story, the readings of the Vidagna Madhava, Lalita Madhava. Anyway, so eventually, you know, eventually Rukmini discovers what's going on, and she says, I'm going to send Satyabhama away. And because Krishna's even being a rascal in Dwarka. You know, he doesn't behave himself very well. So then, what happens then is that Satyabhama wants to commit suicide, so she jumps into the imitation Kaliya lake there. And when everyone hears that, Krishna rushes to save her, and he grabs her to save her, because the snakes aren't real there, but, and she thinks his arms are snakes. She says, why aren't these snakes biting? And then Krishna saves her, and then Rukmini gradually accepts her, and then they live happily ever after. So that, it's a long story. It's a long story, but it illustrates another version of that story. So one may say, why there are many different versions? Because Krishna's pastimes are eternal, and they happen differently in each universe. Like Krishna's pastimes are happening, like Prabhupada said, it's a routine spool. Whoops. That is an iPhone ring. I can tell it from a mile away. That is not an Android phone. So, there's one intelligent man there. So, Prabhupada said it's a routine spool. In other words, Krishna's pastimes are occurring continually in some universe, somewhere. So there's some variety. You know, in Lord Ram's pastimes, too, are always continuing. Sometimes Sita Devi is kidnapped from the Dandakaranya forest. Sometimes she may be kidnapped from Ayodhya. There's different ways it happens, yes. Krishna doesn't have to follow the script. he's a method actor, you know. Krishna does things differently at different times. There's variety in Krishna's pastimes. So that's why you find some descriptions. Sometimes some pastime may have happened in one yuga, or another yuga, or another day of Lord Brahma, because Krishna appears once in the day of Lord Brahma. So Krishna's pastimes are nitya lila, eternally occurring. We probably have to end because everyone wants to take prasad. Or... anyway, it's interesting. So thank you very much. I'm happy to be here. So is prasadam. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premananda. Hari Hari Gaur.
His Holiness Bir Krishna Gosai Maharaj.